You want to talk about spanking first or last? Feel free to join us.
I'm not listening. I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Good, okay.
I don't have to spank my 7-year-old, but
sometimes
I seem to end up spanking my 4-year-old a lot.
Okay.
4-year-olds are that way.
Yeah.
5-year-olds.
Yeah. We don't think that they have sufficiently developed a logic system, and they haven't. That develops at a little later stage, but they have developed a little bit more than we probably assume they have. Want to look at a couple of things. One, that discipline is basically when we discipline after the fact, and in a sense we try to instill some kind of feeling that we hope they will remember when they get involved or are tempted to do it again another time, and then they think of, oh, it'll hurt. I'm not sure that they'll really make that relationship the next time. Whenever spanking or slapping does work, it seldom works the first time forever. It may stop them momentarily, and then an hour later, 10 minutes later, or a day later, or whatever, they're back again, and then again, and then again. And if it finally reaches success, it's probably after a number of times, and it's probably just as likely that they've decided to stop playing the game because something else has challenged them. And it's not so much that they're stopping because of the spanking, but they're stopping because the game has worn off, and it's not paying back the benefits that they thought it would. I like to look instead at discipline as being a word that's related to discipleship. Disciples are learners, and we want our children to learn a more positive way of interaction, to gain some inner controls that says no. And I think even 2-year-olds begin to do this as you may see them as they approach a stove, if you've sat along the way hot, hot, and sometimes when the edge of the stove, my electric stove at least, gets the surface of the stove somewhat hot, even if you don't go by the burner. And you put a hand just on the edge of the stove and you can feel that hot. It's not hot enough to really burn them, but it's hot enough to surprise them. And they begin to connect hot with stove, and you're moving them away, and they'll start to approach the stove, and they'll begin to say hot as they put their hand, you know, still a couple of feet away from it, and they won't go to completely touch it because they connected finally the hot with, it's not comfortable on my hand and I won't go there. So often the experience is what helps a child to learn more than all the reminders that we can give them of don't touch, and sometimes the being moved away. So I have a couple of divisions. One is that when they're under 3 years old, I think the basic form of discipline is to modify the environment. Mm-hmm. Clear away all the things that aren't really needed and only leave those which absolutely need to be left there, so that when you have to say no, there's fewer. When you're saying no about everything, the kid just gives up and says, everything's no, so I'll just go ahead anyway. When there are fewer, it's easy to learn limits when there are just a couple of them. When you come into this particular village, they'll say smoking is only allowed in 3 places, and it begins with P's, the patio, the porch, and the pool hall. Very simple. There's only a couple of basic rules. If they were to start listing 20 different rules as you sit in the bus waiting to leave after this ride up the hill, you'd forget 99% of them. And when we do this with our young kids, whose brains aren't really fully functioning or fully matured, they're in the process, it's hard for them to remember too. So we want to limit, we want to set limits, yes, but to make them as few as possible so that they are more likely to remember what there is. So with an under 3, to modify the environment and remove as many of the obstacles, the problems that might, the things that might present problems.
Yeah, but then at 2, he was opening all the childproof cabinets and everything, that you had everything all cleared away.
Yeah, sometimes it's easier for them to open these childproof locks than it is for the adult.
And they watch you do it.
Yeah, they're quick learners, very quick learners. And even if you move things up, did anyone see who, what was the movie about the rabbit earlier this year?
The cartoon?
Yeah, the cartoon.
Roger Rabbit?
Who killed Roger Rabbit? Who?
Yeah, may I guess
who killed Roger Rabbit? It opened up with this marvelous scene of this little, what, person. Little human. It was really a midget, but it was like a 2 or 3 year old who climbs up the drawers and gets on top of the cupboard and goes over all these obstacles, just misses the knife. As he walks across the stove, his one foot is on the burners that turns him on, and just as he steps past, the burner goes on behind him. He makes another step and he goes past the next burner. It goes on behind him. He just misses the falling knives, and you can see 900 terrible things about to happen to him, and he avoids them all because he's going around this long length of the cupboard to get to the cookies on top of the refrigerator. And then, you know, that's the opening scene, and then it goes away, and you realize it's the filming of something, and that this is really an adult midget that's been playing this role of a little toddler, and all these terrible things that could happen to him. Well, I see a lot of those things, you know, modifying the environment is one way to prevent. But little kids will be very creative, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why, in the order of creation, younger people have children, not older ones, when they supposedly still have some energy. Because those young ones...
They do before they have them.
Those young ones are going... Yes, they do before they have them, and it quickly gets used up. Those young ones are going to require a lot of energy. That's part of the whole... but we don't realize it ahead of time. That's part of the parenting process. And so sometimes our expectations get us into a lot of trouble.
You bet they do.
That I can just say no and my child will understand. Well, there may be some very docile, very compliant, very willing to please children at age 2 that will understand the first no and never touch it again. But those are also few and far between. And sometime later in life, they may also have some more difficulties of not being able to say no to other people who make requests on them when they get into the preteen and teenage years, and have some more difficulty with that.
See, that's where I had my problem, is my first one was so easy, and she
listened to the no that you said.
Now,
second one comes along,
it just doesn't listen to anything or anyone.
Yeah. And partly because we feel we've gone through it once before, and the second one ought to understand some of the things intuitively that we've done with the others, or be able to learn from the other, and it doesn't quite work that way that quickly. They'll learn from each other at a little later stage, but not so much at the early stage.
I think it is good, too, if they can say, it's a pain when they're assertive, but if they're assertive in their personality, I think it does protect them later.
Yeah.
You know, that they're able to say no to people. Wait a minute, I don't have to do that just because you say so.
Can allow them to think before making a decision.
Yeah.
I think also at the age of 2 and 3, we used to call them the terrible 2s. That's a negative. We want to look positively. We can say the terrific 2s. And some others are saying that we really ought to call the 2s to the 3s the first adolescence, because that's the first expression of their independence, 1.5 to 3, 3.5. That helps them to identify me as being separate from you. That's an important stage to go through, and also to recognize that the world is an exciting place to live in. Some of the things are okay and some of the things can be hurtful. So we need to learn differences at that stage, what is acceptable and what isn't, and that's a long-term learning process. We still are working on it in our adult years.
I didn't modify for my son to putting things away, but this is, you know, your toy box, and you can play with these things.
Mm-hmm.
This is new to me.
Yeah, and it may work with certain children to identify.
And I am an only child.
Even the wires to the stereo, everything went up, everything, and it made it 10 times easier. After I did that, it just changed everything. The whole climate in our house came down.
Yes, I didn't have to do that with the first one, but when I realized that it was just easier to get rid of the problem.
Yeah, than to get rid of the kid.
Yeah. Things got a lot easier that way.
It's acceptable in your home to put some things away in cupboards. It's not acceptable to put the kid into the cupboard. And might have been easier.
There were times that would have been wonderful.
And I think the whole idea of the playpen has been lost. I see very few playpens in houses now. Whenever I see a playpen, I think it's a marvelous place for mom to be when she wants to get away from being tugged on and pulled on. Or it's a marvelous place to put your Christmas tree inside the playpen.
I only use the playpen when I'm outside. I never use it inside.
Yeah.
But if I was going to have to do some yard work or something outside, that's when I use it.
We bought one and neither one of them ever liked it. We never really used it. It stayed in the closet.
I think we used ours more often for the portable crib for whenever other kids came to visit, toddlers came to visit. Well, modifying the environment is one of the discipline skills that we might learn with the under three. The redirect, the remove are two additional ones. To find something else that's of similar interest that's okay, to hand them something that they can play with and remove the one item that you don't want them to play with. To distract them, to acknowledge feelings as you're doing any of this. Boy, you really like this little glass thingamajig. But, you know, here's one that's got color on it and it won't break. They'll understand some at an early stage, not all of it at an early stage, and they don't know the difference between what's breakable and what isn't until they actually see it, and that may be too late. Sometimes we can allow children in fantasy what you can't allow them in reality. You really want to stay and swing on the swings all day long. You wish we could just live out here on the playground. You've really had a lot of fun. You've enjoyed it. It's time to go. We'll spend some more time. And probably prefacing that with, we have, do you want 5 more swings on the swing or do you want to go on the teeter-totter before you go?
Yeah.
To give them a choice and to give them a preparation for going. Often, you don't like to be hurried. You're at a gathering and you're in a conversation and all of a sudden your partner says, time to go, going right now. And you're in the midst of an important conversation. And you hate to be disrupted and you're irritated. Well, children have some of those same feelings when they're in the midst of enjoying something and all of a sudden you've had that time schedule in your head, you've been tuned into it, but they haven't. So they want to see how much more time they can bid for and how much time they can get away with. So planning ahead is certainly helpful.
That's why I've always found if I let them know they have 5 to 10 more minutes, it does better than just saying, okay, we're going.
Yeah, and for the young child, the 3 and under, 4 and under, they're not going to understand really what 5 minutes is, but they know that it's a little time from now. And at a younger stage, you can say, well, it's as long as it takes you to do such and such that takes them about 5 minutes. Or it's about as long as it takes us to walk to the park. Or it's about as long as it takes you to eat a bowl of cereal. Or that's about 5 times down the slide and 5 more swings in the swing. Or do you want to go on the merry-go-round? Give them some choices. I think one of the other things that's really very helpful with the 3 and under is to catch them being good. To give them that attention and encouragement when they are doing what is acceptable and okay, and you want to encourage that. And instead of saying, well, aren't you behaving nicely? First of all, to a 2 and 3 year old, what does behave mean and what is nicely? We know what it means, but they don't yet. We assume, because we say the word to them often enough, that they really know the qualitative word of nicely. What's behaving? And if we were to describe and say, gee, you've really had fun playing with those blocks. Or look at how you've put all those blocks away in the box again. Or you've got all the dolls lined up in a row. What are they doing? And maybe even help them to increase some imagination to tell them a story. They've got the little frog stuffed animal out. What do frogs do? I wonder what frogs say. What would frogs eat? How do frogs move? And to involve their imagination as you're encouraging them in the play that they're doing. Often we give them attention when they're doing something in play that we don't want them to do. And when they do the play that's acceptable, creative, imaginative, or just plain having fun, we tend to be silent for fear that if we interrupt them, then we've got them on our hands. And children, children will work for attention. If they get it positively, they'll do positive things to get more attention. If they only get attention when they do negative things, what are they going to do when they want attention next time? They'll do something negative because they know that's what works, and kids will do what works. They will stop doing what doesn't get them their goal. If we stop protesting our children's eating and fussing about them, giving attention about just another bite. Oh, don't be so messy. Oh, you're going to spill that milk. Remove the milk. Redirect it. If they know that they can get your attention when they're fussing and throwing food at the table, what are they going to do the next time? Even though it's negative attention, to a child it's better than no attention at all. So the oftener we can catch them doing what is acceptable and describe what it is that we see, the more they'll continue that kind of behavior. Now, if they're whistling and you've enjoyed it and they just learned how to whistle, and you say, my, what a good whistler you are. You can carry a tune. You'll probably hear a lot of whistling after this. So you may encourage and then just to let them know that you realize it's a new skill. Because they may also do it even if you don't, until you do recognize it, and they'll do it in such a bothersome way that it'll get on your nerves and you'll say, stop that! And instead of giving them encouragement, you've learned a new skill. Sometimes it's fun to do, sometimes it's, where are good places to do whistling? We can redirect it.
I chuckle because of my, you said eating. My brother-in-law commented on what a terrible eater my second niece was. And there's this mess all around the high chair. And Karen said, we had a dog when we had Wendy. And he thought the kid was neat because there was never any food on the floor.
And the dog really had a great time. Marvelous.
I have laughed about that for 8 years.
To recognize how things change, and that may not always be our first accurate perception. There may be other reasons to it. That's a good thing to be aware of. Problem solving. Now that you may think it's strange for under three, but I will deal with problem solving as an important discipline skill, management of behavior, for older children, but it's also very helpful for the younger one, but it's a bit of a change. You're going to be the one mostly involved in problem solving. You can say things out loud. Oh, the milk is spilled. I wonder what we can do about it. How should we get it? And sometimes a little toddler will run over and find a rag and start to, oh, you've got an idea. We'll wipe it up with the rag. Okay. And give them encouragement for thinking. So they'll see us, modeling is an important discipline skill too. They'll see us thinking things through. You've done something that hasn't worked out. Oh, I dropped the apples all over the floor. Where are we going to put them now? And then the child would come and help pick them up in hand. Oh, you're going to help me pick them up. That's one way to solve the problem. Okay. So even though children aren't able to do the problem solving themselves, they may recognize that you're working through something and they can be helpful. And the helpfulness can be encouraged and you can both work on it together. And they also get, they build up, get understanding through repetition that there are things that will happen that you don't want to happen, but we can solve them. Mistakes don't become terrible, horrible, no good, very bad things. Mistakes become things that we can learn from.
Depending on mom's stress level.
Depending upon mom's stress level, and that we'll get into. Yeah. About age one and a half, you can begin to offer choices. They may or may not fully understand them at the very beginning, but it gets you into the pattern. And you can say, well, now, do you want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or just plain peanut butter? And they may or may not be able to know what they're choosing, but they begin to realize that they have a little bit of power in an acceptable place, and they don't have to find unacceptable ways to gain that power through the no, won't kind of responses to them, to you. Between the ages of 2 until really about 10, you can use the technique of time out. Timeout is another term for that is renewal time. That we can sit and think about what's another way we can do this so it'll work out okay. I don't want to send kids to a corner, first of all. I think that's demeaning to them. But I could send them to a chair at the breakfast table, the bottom step going upstairs, or the top step if you've got a lower basement level, a chair in the family room that's not facing the television, not where their toys are. I have a feeling that for 2, 3, 4-year-olds at least, to send them up to their room is not really a timeout space. It becomes a defiant space when it's really that isolated. But also, they've got all sorts of toys and such there. What kind of...
And you run up and tell them, you can't play with those toys.
What happens if a child won't stay?
Well, I think it takes a while the first time, first 10, 15, 20 times perhaps, and you may plan on, if that's part of your expectation, it won't, and you recognize that you're teaching the child a new skill. You know, what's the skill that you've learned? Anyone working recently to learn the computer? Or the typewriter? You all type?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how long did it take you to learn that home row of keys? First time you tried it? An hour? Couple of hours? And you were in your teenage years. A lot more development of your mind and ability. A lot more other experiences using your hands, dexterity and such. So with a child who has fewer experiences, a lower frustration level, a lower understanding level, not much at all of a reasoning level at that stage. That comes at a later when you get into school. It'll take time. That's just practice, just experience. And
you
so
still can't get him to get to sit in the chair. I mean, I have to practically sit there and hold him in.
Four. Okay.
And then he just gets angrier and angrier and angrier.
Okay. And then you might do some problem solving with him that he's 4 and to say, you don't really want to sit in that chair, no. But I want you to have some time to think about what you're doing and how you can do it so it will come out right next time, so we won't have a problem. Where can we do that? Where would it be?
I have a problem where the minute I tell him that this is not acceptable, mm-hmm. instant, hot, uncontrollable anger,
mm-hmm.
to where me talking to him isn't doing, I mean, he yeah. can't even hear what I'm trying to say or, you know.
So you're not going to get through to him when he's in a rage, and the rage is an excuse for, I can tune mom out this way, mm-hmm. and I don't have to do anything she says because she can't make me. Mm-hmm. He realizes he's found a power technique for you. One of the ways may be to talk about it after things have calmed down. To find that quiet, no problem time, and to say, you know, to identify the problem that you own it. I really am puzzled I have a problem when we need to talk about something, you find a way to do such and such. And to invite him in on the problem solving. Often we let the children just be the problem and we create the solution. And then they don't accept the solution. If we can get people to be kids, and as with adults, if we can get them to be part of the problem-solving process, they will be less likely to be just the problem. Let me go on with the four-year-old in timeout. He's getting some attention. He's working toward a goal. He's feeling that it's a power play that you're doing, and his response to the power play is to try to get revenge. Or to say, you can't have power over me. I'm just going to, and whether you can take your wind out of their sails. There's an excellent tape by a woman called Barbara Coloroso, C-O-L-O-R-O-S-O. Sometimes you can find it in bookstores. Some teachers in school, or nursery school teachers, may have heard about it. She's from Colorado. And the tape is called Discipline. Kids are worth it. It's worth the investment.
I've had it.
Yeah, I may have mentioned it yesterday.
Well, that's a tape?
It's a tape.
What age of child is she addressing?
She's really addressing a broad range, probably more above the age of 2.5.
And that would relate to 7-year-old?
Yes, very much. She's now, this fall, supposed to be putting out a tape that will deal with teenage years. Her children at the time she did this were 5, 7, and 8.5, something like that, or 9. But one of the things that, as we move away from the special areas for just the 3 and under, and going into those that are older, where their verbal ability is a little bit more developed, their independence is a little bit more developed. They've had a few more experiences. We've got a wider range of possibilities. And the first one I want to talk about is to deal with the issue of anger. Our anger, as well as the child's. And sometimes they'll just keep on and on and on and on with something. We may say something to them 3, 4, 5 times, but they'll keep on going until we finally get to the point of saying, we want to carry through on and make sure that they finally do. But it's like the old story of Johnny going into kindergarten, and his kindergarten teacher says, Johnny, how come anytime I want you to do something, I have to tell you 5 times before you'll do it? And he looked up at her with his big blue eyes and said, whenever my mommy wants me to do something, she tells me 5 times. Now, sometimes, depending upon our patience and our energy level, we may not get to the 5. We'll get to the 3, and then we respond.
Are we conditioning them to not respond by waiting so long?
Excellent. We are teaching them that when we say it the first or the second or third or fourth time, we really don't expect them to hear and to respond. And then
we're working it hard at saying it once, and then if it doesn't work, then carry through.
Yeah, might be
working
helpful.
Working ourselves really hard not to do that because we've realized we were doing that.
Yeah, and you may need to say to the child, especially a 3- and a 4-year-old, I realize I keep telling you things over and over again, and that must sound like I'm nagging. And I don't want to nag. I don't want to waste my energy. And I don't want you to tune me out. So, from now on, I'm going to say something once, and I will make sure that you have my attention. And what's even helpful, and Barbara does a marvelous little scene on her tape, is that to get the attention of this child to go over and to say, Mary, and get her attention, I need you to pick up your toys now before we have a snack. Now, what do I need you to do?
So you ask them, what do I need you to do? You let them come up with.
Yeah, so I know what they
yes,
what
so
do I need
you
to do.
If he repeats it, he usually can carry out that task to me.
And by when? You know, sometimes we just stop. And then, haven't you picked up all those toys yet? Well, you didn't tell me when I had to do it.
So we set a time.
I was going to.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah, or I was going to, and then they really have. And they're still, and it's probably important to give them warning time. Not that if you, not warning in the sense if you don't do it, you're going to, your bottom's going to get paddled, but the warning of we have 10 minutes before we have to leave for the dentist. And you might even set in your time, give yourself an extra 5 minutes. But to say, I have 10 minutes and we'll set.
I have a timer.
We'll set the timer.
When the timer goes off, it has to be done.
Mm-hmm. One thing I think I've messed up at is that sometimes I'll mention what I wanted to do and she'll say, I already did it. And it's my fault because I haven't gone to see that she's done it. I'm busy doing other things and I'll go, oh, sorry. But if I said, hey, oh, great, thanks for getting that done. Now maybe you want to help me with this or something. But a lot of times it's just, you know, I'll say, well, I asked you to such and such. I did it. You know, and I have just let that go.
Haven't checked.
It's hard to follow through on all those little bitty things. It can be exhausting after a while.
And you might even tell, another possibility is to tell the child, come and let me know when you're finished.
That'd be helpful.
So that they can share that information with you and you can encourage and affirm them for having done it.
My four-year-old doesn't like that timer and it's been lost for a month. We can't.
He's hidden it somewhere.
We cannot find that thing anywhere.
Maybe sounds it's like pressure.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, anything he doesn't like, he takes care of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he realized he's got some power and he's managing to use it. We were visiting my nephew and his little 6-year-old, we were saying, where is the fly swatter? It was a picnic, family reunion, lots of people, doors open, lots of flies. Where is the fly swatter? Oh, I think, then mom said, yes, I used it to swat his bottom with the other time. And so he took it. He would not find it for us. No error. You know, he had done something, and he wasn't going to have it used on him again, and it didn't matter how many flies were around. He wasn't bothered, but he was not going to bring that fly swatter out again because it wasn't going to be used on him. So kids are really pretty sharp. So if we look at our anger, if we do not want children to recognize the power of anger, then we need to be able to say something to ourselves in the control of our own anger that says, will this really be of benefit if I get angry and start yelling all sorts of things, whatever the things are, words, the you shoulds, you shouldn't, you're terrible, you're lazy, you're slow, and so forth. Is that going to be more encouraging? Do I end up getting madder, more angry, frustrated? So we might get in touch with what the real feeling is underneath that anger, because there's anger is always a second response to a more primary feeling. I'm angry because I'm really annoyed, irritated,
that's
disappointed.
Funny. I just went through some therapy because I felt I was becoming abusive, and that's not the way I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the one thing he said. He said, set yourself back and decide if you're angry at the child or if you're angry because it's not going the way you want it to go or if you need to step back and...
Or if you're even
before you act, and
important.
Boy has, I mean,
that's been helpful.
It's changed with me and my 4-year-old have. He will now halfway. We can do things together, whereas before we couldn't do anything together. Yeah, since I've been able to calm myself, saying, "Calm down, now react. Don't not reacting in the anger," which is everybody does is react in anger. It's simple to do. It's easy to do, but if you can step back a little first and then go, I have found it whole lot easier.
You found it helpful to be able to give yourself a little bit of time to really think about the issue and what else can I do about it. Give yourself some choices.
Doesn't mean I can make it.
Well, if you improve yourself and you only do it, if you can manage to do it 1 out of 10 times, that's 1 time more than you did before, so that's an improvement. Then you can work for 2.
But I found myself reacting the exact same way I was treated as growing up.
And you didn't like it then.
And I swore I was not going to treat my kids the way I was treated.
That's happened to me, too.
And I stepped right into that same pattern.
We tend to parent the way
we were broken it.
Yeah, we tend to parent the way we were parented until we make a conscious decision.
It's a real victory when you overcome that, though, and you finally realize, because by saying, I'm not going to do what my dad did, I'm not going to yell at every little thing, and you find yourself doing it, it's so demeaning. It's like you just hate yourself. And that makes me feel even less self-control. It's like, doggone it, you know, why do I even have to deal with this constant pushing at my limit setting? You know, why do, it's so tiring. You step back from it, it just gives you that time to, I don't know, not let that child keep pushing.
And do you realize the model that you're doing, that you can take a time out yourself to renew and to think of some alternatives, to give yourself some choice rather than just dealing with chance?
I think Gail knows that I didn't have too much problem with Stephen as a child, but I don't know that you know what happened when he was in high school. And he did not come home after a football game. I had met this kid his sophomore year, and I foresaw trouble, but I wasn't going to tell him that it was his choice. And he didn't come home, he didn't come home, and it got to be about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Ooh.
And I was so angry when he came in that I knew there was no way I could talk to him. And I simply said, have you been drinking? No. Have you done drugs? No. Are you in trouble with the police? He said, no, we've just been driving around. And I said, I am too angry to discuss it now. Go to your room and we will talk about it in the morning. And he went to his room and then came to my room and said, here are the car keys.
He had your car?
Yes.
What were your real feelings when you didn't see him around until 3 o'clock in the morning? What were you really feeling?
Well, I thought he was dead.
So you were really very frightened and concerned about his well-being.
Because he had never done this before.
Yeah. And what often happens if you had not done some of that control is that we would lash out, how can you be so inconsiderate, how can you, and spew out anger, when really what was going on underneath is, oh, I'm so relieved you're alive and in one piece and not hurt. And we never get that basic feeling out to them to say, I was really worried and concerned about your safety, that something had happened and no one would know how to get in touch with me. It's a whole different set of messages that the child receives. Boy, I really had you concerned and worried. I should have thought, I mean, I could think, I could tell you, let you know a little bit ahead of time. But when you're just blasted with anger, your most basic response to having a blast of anger is to defend yourself, or to prove that you can't have power over me, or sit and take it quietly and then find a way to get back at you with revenge some other time.
And a month later, the young man was no longer part of his social circle.
Yeah.
And but if I had just been irrational at 3 in the morning,
my brother,
he could have been a very
and
best
friend.
He had
long hair, this is in the 60s, and he came home and did that, and the first thing he saw when he came in the door at 3, 4 a.m., was the barber chair and scissors, and my dad didn't say a word. He just sit down and cut his hair real short. So he had to go to school the next day like that, humiliated and looking different than everybody else. And it was like the supreme show of power over him. And yet my dad has grown so much since then. He's a totally different person. You know?
He probably learned from that experience himself.
Oh yeah, he blew it so bad. It hurt him worse than anybody, because he had a real rough time with both of us for a lot of years. And we've all kind of grown out of that now.
You know, like Christopher was 1.5 when we lost him for over an hour.
Mm, scary.
He was walked off.
1.5
And he probably wasn't even aware
he
that
wasn't,
he wasn't happy.
He was
curious. He was exploring, adventuring. It was fun for him.
Well, what he had done is he had walked to my girlfriend's house, who I had strolled him in the stroller 3 times a week.
He's a
he knew exactly where he was going.
Yeah, he's smart.
But when we finally found him, all I did was hold him and cry and cry and cry. And when it got to it, there was nothing I could do to tell him. I mean, I kept saying I was so worried I didn't know where you were, but at 1.5.
He's not going to understand, but he knows that you were still accepting him. And yeah, Mom's good to be back with you. Where were you all this time?
And the next day I found him at the exact same place. This time he wasn't lost for an hour. I went right there, and there he was. He just left her porch, and he would just sit on her porch.
How quickly they can get away from you.
Oh, they don't really understand either. I mean, they think we're just yelling for no reason. They don't But I remember feeling that way as a kid too. What is your problem, Mom? I'm in control here. I know what I'm doing. There's no danger. I'm not afraid.
They don't see all the possibilities of what can happen. And what happens is that we have some false expectations when something happens with kids. We assume they ought to know what the limits are, and they may not. Yes?
The daycare's over.
At 11:30?
Yeah.
At 11:30.
Do you mind having two in here if we can keep them quiet?
Fine, bring them in.
Is it 11:45?
Not the nurse. Not the nursery.
It's 11:30.
The older kids are, but not the little kids.
What are the older kids? Your little kids like two?
Yours is three and mine's four, right?
I've got
two and a four-year-old.
So Michelle doesn't like it.
Not yet.
Yeah, at least 10:40.
Well, they normally run into 11:45, but I think they weren't going to run at all when they got here on Saturday, so I think because they were under short staff.
Well, they do move staff around a lot, and they can certainly move them into that.
Put the high school kids together.
So recognizing our own feelings and getting back in control of them, so that if we want to teach children to be in control of their feelings, for instance, and not do temper tantrums, then we have to provide them a model of not throwing a temper tantrum ourselves, being an adult, and find another way to deal with the feelings that we have. Another issue that gets us into problems with discipline is the blaming. Why did you do that? You did such and such. No, I didn't. And then they've got to protect themselves. So I think blame, our expectations, our anger, how we order, command, direct, threaten, bribe, all promote a kind of goal for kids. They will either resist the threats, the commands, the orders, because wanting to have respect for themselves, you can't say that to me, that way at least. And so we might get in touch with really how we communicate with our children. What's our tone of voice? That would you use the ordering, threatening, bribing tone of voice with a good friend of yours? Or would you use a very conversational tone of voice? Your hands need to be washed, rather. Get in there right now and wash those hands! Any little child with a, you know, wanting to develop a sense of self is going to stand back on the 2 feet with the arms thrown back and say, no, won't do. When they probably would have done it very well if it had been time to wash hands. I remember my two children at ages 3 and 6 were staying with my aunt for a period of time while my husband and I were at a conference, and hers was an adult house. I think her daughter was probably a teenager at that time. Every time they had a snack or finished a meal, she would say, okay, arms up, march you into the bathroom, and they'd go in like they were cowboys and Indians, you know, or the sheriff was after them, and they giggled and laughed all the way to the bathroom and washed their hands. And when we came to pick them up, they said, Aunt Marion, make us go wash our hands. Because they wanted to show us what they were doing. And they had a great time, and she did a lot of fun things with them that I learned a lot from. So the ordering, the commanding, the threatening, the bribing are teaching them, if we want anything done, we really need to raise the bribe, we really need to carry through on a threat, we really need to be harsh in our order, and then we get resistance anyway. So we might find a way to do some problem solving together, to decide together, to offer a choice. Do you want me, for a little one, do you want me to carry you into the bathroom to wash your hands, or do you want to walk by yourself? For an older one, to say, you may do such and such as soon as you have your hands washed. You may stay at the table or and play here, or you may go wash your hands, and then you're free to go anywhere else in the house. You choose. And then they have to live with the consequences. And they do something or don't do something, and you follow through by saying, I see you've decided. Or sometimes kids will get pretty smart and they'll say, I don't like those choices. Mm-hmm. You can add a third one and then say, do you, repeating the first two, and then say, or do you want mom to choose? And that still gives them a choice. They can choose one, two, or whether they want you to choose. That allows them to feel they have some power so they can take power positively rather than having to take it in negative situations when power isn't really helpful, doing something negatively. Sometimes the broken record helps to you. Have you ever done that? One of the other basic things on discipline is to set the household rules. You know, when they're three and under, you basically set them. As they get to be four and older, particularly when they're in school, even kindergarten, to work through what are the rules that we need to remember to keep safe, be safe, and so people aren't hurt and things get done. What should be our household rules? When kids participate in setting the rules or doing the problem solving, they're much more likely to carry it out because I was part of it. It's not something that's just stamped on me or forced on me. I have a choice. So to help set those rules together and those limits, what is allowable behavior and what is not allowable behavior? Sometimes even going the next step, depending upon their age, what would be the consequence if you decide not to follow through on this? Sometimes kids will set a lot more stringent consequence than you're willing to set. And sometimes we have to have them back down a little bit because that's really unfair. It's too much for that particular misdeed. And when you have some limits set, then when that's not, they're trying to avoid or delay or circumvent the limit, you can play the broken record game by saying, if the limit is, you know, you need to make your bed in the morning before you go off to school, and if you don't make it before going to school, then you may make it when you come home from school before you go out to play. Not you have to, but you may, before you go out to play. So they come in and say, but I'm going over to so-and-so house, and I have to go right now. You may go as soon as you get your bed made. They argue and they cajole and they beg, bribe, plead, wail, gnash teeth. And you can, instead of getting involved in the same argument with them until your emotions are both up, you can simply keep the calm and not even have to think any further by saying the rule over again. You may go out to play as soon as you get your bed made. And they'll bribe and they'll beg and they'll complain or they'll start to go into their next cons, as Barbara Coloroso talks about them, of you're a mean old mom, nobody else's mother makes them do this. And instead of getting involved in that argument, feel comfortable and confident enough about yourself that recognizing what they're trying to do and repeat over again. You may go out to play as soon as you get your bed made. Teachers do this in school a lot, just repeating the rule over again that they may go out to play as soon as they get the bed made. There's lots of books upstairs. So playing the broken record is really a very helpful skill to remember. It keeps you out of arguments. Barbara Coloroso says, never argue with anyone over the age of two because their language skills are too well developed and you'll lose. The other thing is that it just plain raises your anger level up too high. Just work through what your family limits are, your family expectations. And if the children are too young, you get in touch with them. So that whenever they start to challenge something, you can just calmly repeat the rule. I said we could talk about spanking at a later time. Our basic rule in our household was that we cannot allow you to hit or hurt another living being through actions or words. Which meant they couldn't pull the cat's tail, they couldn't kick the dog, they weren't allowed to yell nasty names at their sibling or other friends, or push them out of the way, because that's hurting. And so whenever someone comes in or to play and they get into a conflict and one starts to hit the other, you can just say, I cannot allow you to hit or hurt another one verbally or physically. That's the rule in this house. How are you going to solve it? Barbara Coloroso in her tape says she solves the problems with kids when they're school age by giving them one piece of paper, one pencil, and saying, you may sit on the chair until you come up with one story. of what happened and what you're going to do about
it. That's good.
Which gives them the responsibility of not blaming each other, not blaming mom, not blaming the elements, but taking responsibility for what happened. And they learn what editorializing is versus journalism. And they'll say, there was one girl who took one toy that another person wanted without even giving names. Anyway, another parent in a group I had said what worked for her was to set her children up on chair on stools. They had a counter in the kitchen with stools for a breakfast counter, and to say, you may sit on the stools until you figure out how you're going to solve your problem. And that there's no kicking or hurting the other person by words or by action. And they'll sit for a long while, but they realize that until they solve the problem, they can't get down from the chair. And then they decide they're missing a lot of playtime. They might as well get it over. At first, it'll take a longer period of time because they're trying to outwait the other person. They're trying to let the other person give in. If you have one child who tends to give in, you might want to take that child aside sometimes and to say, it seems to me you're giving in a lot, and you may not... How do you feel about that? And if they say, I don't like it, and it's not fair, but he's always making me, well, how do you suppose, given some assertiveness skills, how can you say, I need, I want, let's solve it this way, to come up with some ideas on your own? And that's the beginning of problem solving. So you begin to teach them some problem solving skills that can help them in other parts of their lives when you're not around. Another part of that is never do for children what they can do for themselves. So although parents can solve the problem very quickly, you might need to give them some direction and to say, it looks like you've got a problem to solve. How are you going to solve it? Or it looks like you're unhappy about something. How can you tell the other person what you don't like? Tell them in words rather than with hurts. Helping them to acknowledge their own feelings and to identify how they're feeling. And then what can we do about this? How can we process what went wrong that it doesn't have to happen again? That can be taught at a fairly early age, beginning with 3 and 4. One of our basic roles as a parent is to teach our child how to think, not just what to think. And this is really giving them the basis for all future growth. If we're always telling them, don't, because, there may be sometimes we have to give them some information. But sometimes after you've said it once or twice, you might even say, I don't like what's going on. What do you suppose is happening? To ask them the question, to let them come up with, or what else do you think you can do? We often tell our kids what they can't do. And another skill and discipline might be to tell them what we can do. Tell Mary how you feel when she tears up your paper instead of hitting her. To put the positive first with the limit after.
My 7-year-old, the situation's all calm and you're trying to talk to her, she immediately goes into tears. Whether you're calm and you're just trying to talk, that's probably her way of getting out of it by crying.
You probably caught on. She's discovered that water power.
One is totally angry, and the other one gets reduced to tears.
She's discovered that water power works for her, and the other one has probably discovered that anger works for her. She sees that some other people that they'll give in when she gets angry, or this is what other people do and they get their way. Well, I'll try it too. Remember, kids?
When you don't give in, you never change your mind once they start the behavior you don't like, but it goes on and it doesn't seem to change. Is it just the attention itself is the behavior?
Yeah, and sometimes you may need to just walk out of the room and to say, I know. It may be helpful to give them some information and to say, to acknowledge their feelings, I know you're really upset and bothered by this. You really want to, but I cannot allow it. Now, when you're ready, when I can't tell you to stop feeling that way. Yeah, when you feel better, Come and let's talk about it. I'll be in the kitchen.
That's good. That's better than saying, you go to your room and when you're ready to talk about it, come out. If you go away and say, come and see me when you're ready to talk about it.
Yeah, and to leave them right where they are and take you out of the attention giving.
What happens if they come with you? And that's the thing that I'm finding. I do that sort of thing. I say, I'll
follow you around and sob and wail
along with me.
And to say, you know, if you want to cry, that's okay for me. With me, you may cry as much as you want to on this, but I'd like you to cry in here because I'm going in to work on something else, and I don't want to listen to the cry. Then go into then do the potty timeout. You go into the bathroom and close the door. And what will happen if they
don't take a book because it could be a half hour so that you're in that bathroom.
If they sit outside the door and they continue to whine, fuss, and cry, then you know for sure it's your attention that they want, and you have to be able to say when you quiet down, not constantly, but to say on a couple occasions when you quiet down, then we can do something together. But and refuse to give attention for the negative behavior.
It's worse till they get the hang of it too. They'll keep persisting and maybe they want to see how long you can stand it. They may cry for a long, 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 long time.
I've been working on this stuff for years.
How old?
Seven.
Okay. And she recognized that at times she can still get away with it, and even though at times she can't, it's worth keeping trying at it for the few times that she may succeed. It may be worth the while. Are there siblings? Okay.
No, there will be. We're in the process of adoption, but there aren't yet.
Uh-huh. And to really work through this and to recognize when you can give time and when she has her own time with her friends, that to have this attention, to talk about attention, 7-year-old can understand a good amount and be able to identify with the other. And to talk about, can we find a way for you to let me know when you need attention instead of doing a misdeed or doing something that you know is not acceptable?
She'll be right back, okay? She's going to come right back in.
She's right, look through the window. you can help her consider choices, consider alternatives. Look at it as a problem. I realize that this has been happening quite a lot. What can we do about it? I mean, I'm sure you're not able to allow to do that at school. And if it is, it's going to be causing a problem in school.
See, she doesn't do anything at school. I get told what a wonderful, cooperative,
Then we might want to have a conversation about it and say, what else can we do about it? And how can I make sure that I give you positive attention at times when you need it? And then recognize when do we give attention and try to give it for positive things rather than negative things. I usually have my classes, parenting classes, do a homework assignment the first session where you take a sheet of paper and write acceptable behaviors at the top, unacceptable behaviors at the bottom, and then fill in. And be aware of what's acceptable to you. And sometimes we aren't aware that they say good morning with a cheery voice sometime, or that they carry my coffee cup from the family room into the kitchen. We just assume and expect that to be done. But if we can give encouragement for those little things, they'll do those little things more often, because it's nice to get those accolades and showing appreciation and recognizing, hey, it's fun to do this with you. A handy-dandy all-purpose word in the whole area of discipline is that of describe. Instead of telling kids, labeling kids, warning, threatening, controlling them, being ridiculing, to describe what it is you like, describe what you see, describe the problem that you're having, describe your expectations. What can you do about it? And ask them to become part of the solution.
What's acceptable to you or unacceptable is maybe borderline unreasonable. I need a lot of quiet. Mm-hmm. And I've had a hearing disability for a long time and had surgery that's corrected. And I can't handle a lot of shrill noise. It just sends me. And It's like something I remove myself from it, but there are times when I want it quiet in the house.
And how old are they again? How old are your children again?
5 and 2.
5 and 2. Okay, the 5.
This is not a good time to walk quiet.
Yeah. 5-year-old is certainly one that you can say, when you want to talk to me, come and say it softly. I'll hear it easier softly.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, and he can begin to understand your new hearing. The 2-year-old, the more often you can talk with a soft voice, the more often they will model you.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers say, even in nursery school, that they've come in with they're very hoarse or they've lost their voice, and they'll say to the kids, I can't talk very loudly today because I have a cold. And she says, pretty soon all the kids are whispering
mm-hmm.
with her.
Mm-hmm.
So if when they start with a high voice, if you can come back with a very whispered voice directed to them, they will more often respond to that lower voice, and you can begin to train that kind of low, soft
some
response.
Of that I think they use too for attention getting, mm-hmm. because if it gets, the noise level gets up really high, I'm right there.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, it's like, you've got to go outside and tell them that's an outdoor noise, and you need to take that
out. You have a choice. You may talk quietly in here, or you may be loud outside. Where do you want, you choose what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. They'll get out the pots and pans and the spoons, and that's great outside, but I think some of it is, let's see how far we can get away with this.
You may even have to get yourself a very funny pair of earmuffs that you put on inside the house to say, this noise is too loud for my ears,
mm-hmm.
I cannot take it, so I guess I'm going to put on my earmuffs.
And
that will let them know.
Uh-huh.
And if you want
then you have to make sure you know that you can't, if they start to talk to you, you can't hear.
Yeah, and if you want me, come and tap on my shoulder or, you know, whatever is acceptable to you.
Would you be addressing giving apology to children at all? What that triggered for me is that I had a back injury in the sun class and I've just lost it. I've been so upset because whatever she's doing is making me hurt more. And then I end up apologizing.
See, I've been really ill too. I'm well now, but I've been through a really long illness. And so I haven't had the energy to deal with all of this. And I have a background in education. I've taught parenting courses too, but it's all out the window when you don't feel good. It's like,
that's right.
You know, and so I'm coming out where I've got my health back and I'm doing repair work between my daughter and myself because I've really lost it. I've been verbally abusive to her because I can't
there's
handle.
There's no reason why the adult can't say they're sorry
and
they made a mistake.
Is one of the fears in that is whether it's going to create some kind of schizophrenia tendency in her. And I scream and I yell.
Well, moment, you're
and
wonderful.
I say, you know, it's my problem, not yours, and I'm really sorry I did that. And she's like, you're pretty good with it. But
I just say, mommy's really sick, you know. And mommy just can't handle it. You know, and it's been, I've been well now for about a year, so she's just 5. So it's really been good. I'm getting more consistent, and my husband's so extremely patient that he fills in where I feel like I don't have it. Fortunately, he's that kind of person where I have him to depend on, and a lot of husbands aren't that way.
What you might do before you get to that point of screaming is to be able to say, my back hurts, and it's very, I need to lie down, or whatever it is, that before it gets to the point that you are not in the control that you want to be in.